Hi, I'm Notre Dame safety Kyle Hamilton, and you're listening to Single High, a Notre Dame football podcast from UHND.com, the official home of the Kyle Hamilton Fan Club.
Back to throw, Meyer. Looks, rolls to the right. Pump fake, throws the ball. It is caught, Reggie Brooks! Reggie Brooks got it!
Downfield, and Hamilton again, coming over from that safety position and making the interception.
DB's on the field, the Sherron Jones throws.
To go almost 20 yards.
Ishmael down around the 5-yard line. The kick will come down and Ragib will take it. Takes it at the 12, 15, 20, 25. He's at the 30. Afterburners are on. He's gone.
That is the All-American Kyle Hamilton. His sixth career interception.
40, 45, 50. Down the sideline. At the 35. Or right to the goal line. At the 10. The 5. A touchdown.
Here are your hosts, Frank Vitovich and Greg Flamon.
Welcome back to another edition of Single High, the Notre Dame football podcast from UHND.com. I am your host for this evening, Frank Vitovich, and I am coming to you solo this week. My partner in crime, Greg, who is the president of the Kyle Hamilton Fan Club, is unavailable this week. And I was a little bit busy at my day job this week, so was unable to track down a guest host. So y'all just got me for the next 45 minutes, hour and a half. I don't know. We're going to see how long I can ramble and talk about Notre Dame football before I turn in for the evening and push this bad boy live. But needed to get a pod up this week because football season is almost here, folks. Fall camp starts at Notre Dame today when you all are hopefully listening to this. I'm recording it late Thursday night, but by Friday morning, the boys in gold helmets are going to be back out on the practice field. Marcus Freeman is going to be addressing the media at noon on Friday, and football season for the 2022 season will be officially upon us. Still got some time to go until the season opener against Ohio State, but we're going to have some practice reports coming out. We're going to have, hopefully, some news leaking out of camp, although if spring practice was any indication, not going to have a whole lot of that based on what we saw in the spring. But any football is good football, and we've had months and months and months of no football, and that's not fun. That's not fun for anybody. It's oppressively hot out right now. It's gross, and the long national nightmare of summer is almost over, and fall will be here, and we're going to be able to watch our boys for the 12 Saturdays coming up pretty dang soon here. But before we get into recruiting, we got a couple things from a housekeeping perspective that we are going to have to go through this week. One, without Greg here, we can spend a little bit more time on the beer of the week that I have here for this week's pod. This week, on National IPA Day, mind you, again, I won't get this live until Friday morning, but Thursday, August 4th, was National IPA Day. So happy belated National IPA Day for all of you who celebrate. I got a double IPA here called Kinetics from the brewery Equilibrium. Great, 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 great brewery in the state of New York. It's in Middletown, New York, to be precise. This is a double IPA packing in a 8.5% alcohol content. So let's open this up. Ooh, there is that crack. That's not a sound effect, folks, by the way, in case anybody was wondering. Every time you hear that on this podcast, that is a real beer that is being opened. And also, full disclosure, because it is National IPA Day, I may have had one or two before sitting down to hit record tonight. So let's give this a taste. Let's see what we got going, and then we'll start jumping into some things. Ooh, that's pretty tasty, guys. That is not bad. Yeah, I will drink this. Obviously, because as you all know from previous podcasts, there's no refrigerators within arm's reach of my podcasting setup, so I have to. But even if I didn't have to, I would finish this one. It's pretty damn good for 8.5%. So now we got that taken care of. Let's get some other housekeeping out of the way. I missed a review last week when I recorded with ND Tex or Ryan Ritter. Some of you may know him from Her Loyal Sons. I forgot about the reviews. Ryan and I were kicking it. I had so much fun. I forgot to check, and that is on me, folks. But we got one this week from the Reedy. 5-star, as always. We're still rocking the perfect 5-star rating, so we appreciate those reviews that y'all are sending in. Keep sending them in, by the way, because as you can see, when I do remember, I'm going to read them in the beginning of the pod. We're like less than 5 minutes in, and we got a review coming. So the review from the Reedy, it's titled The Intro, and it says, if you aren't ready to run through a wall while listening to the intro, go see a doctor. Why, thank you, the Reedy. We appreciate that. Good buddy of mine who used to be an old coworker, actually, who lives down the street from me, put that intro together for us. We've gotten lots of compliments on the intro on Twitter and in the comments. Every time I see him, I screenshot them and I send them to him. So appreciate the reviews as always. Keep them coming. Keep the 5-star reviews coming, preferably. But even if you don't, we've read every single one of our 54 ratings that we have on Apple Podcasts on the pod so far. So keep them rolling in. All right, on to the subject at hand, folks. First, before we get into fall camp, Notre Dame recruiting is heating up yet again. It had a blistering start to the month of July. Notre Dame had a string of commitments, to start the month. And here at the beginning of August, it looks like the same is going to happen. Thursday night, Notre Dame picked up another commitment from Jaden Osbury, linebacker from the state of Louisiana, right in the backyard of our good friend Bayou Brian Kelly. Osbury committed to Notre Dame over the likes of LSU, Michigan, because we always like to beat Michigan for recruits. But Auburn was in the mix as well, where his brother plays, Texas A&M. Was in there, Ohio State. All the big boys were included in the recruitment of Jaden Osbury. He's coming in at the On Three has him as the number 117 overall recruit in the country, the number 10 linebacker, number 7 prospect out of the state of Louisiana. A little bit higher on some of the other services. 24/7, for instance, has him about 105 overall in their consensus, but right around top 100 overall, type of player. ESPN Arrivals actually have Osbury really high. ESPN ranks him as the number 38 overall prospect in the country and the number 4 linebacker in the country. But huge pickup, for Notre Dame in the class of 2023 for a couple of reasons. One, from a sheer just petty standpoint, Notre Dame just picked up a big time recruit right in Brian Kelly's backyard. Osbury, plays is from Baton Rouge. His dad played for LSU. He plays at University Lab High School in Baton Rouge, which is about a four minute drive to LSU's campus. Or as my partner in crime, who is not here this week, Greg, pointed out on Twitter earlier tonight, probably about 3.5 minute ride in Brian Kelly's brand new Tesla that he loves to talk about in interviews. Obviously, stealing a recruit right out from under the nose of LSU and Mr. Brian Kelly is pretty awesome. For again, like I said, just for pure petty standpoint. But Osbury's also a pretty damn good football player. So let's not let's not forget forget that. If you go based on, again, just overall composite rankings, he's probably sixth, seventh, maybe fifth. Again, it depends on which rankings you're looking at. But you know, one of the top commits for the class of 2023 for the Irish gives Notre Dame one heck of a linebacking core. In this class, joining Drake Bowen, who has been Notre Dame's most vocal commit in terms of recruiting on Twitter, and kind of galvanizing this this class, and Preston Zinter, who is one of the lower rated recruits, but I know the Notre Dame staff thinks very highly of him. He was an early offer for Notre Dame. But the three of them really give Notre Dame a pretty outstanding linebacker class on the heels of what was one of the best linebacker classes we've seen the Irish put together in many, 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 many years. So add that all up, and I mean, there's a lot to be excited about for Notre Dame adding somebody like Jane Osbury. And it's funny because I remember multiple pods ago, at this point, and I don't remember how many ago, but maybe like 2 months ago, when Greg and I were talking through some recruits, when things started to look like momentum was really going in Notre Dame's favor with this class. And I remember he and I talking about Osbury and me being like, I don't know, man. I was like, I'm skeptical. And the only reason I was skeptical is because these kind of recruiting battles are just generally not ones that Notre Dame's won in the last, 10, 15, 20 years, where you have a legacy, legacy recruit in the shadows of a big time, growing up in the shadows of a big time program, who commits to Notre Dame. And that's exactly what had happened here. So very happy that I was, that I was wrong and that my skepticism was, misplaced in this, in this instance, because with the commitment of Jane Osbury, Notre Dame has moved back into the top spot in the 24/7 team rankings by a hair over Alabama, and with three more commitments than the Crimson Tide had, probably, going to be a little bit short-lived, but still pretty awesome that we are at August 4th, or again, August 5th or August 6th by the time y'all are listening to this, and Notre Dame still has the top-rated class in the country based, following this commitment. And the Irish are probably going to add a couple more here in the next few days. So in addition to Osbury, Notre Dame is also expected to pick up a commitment Friday evening from safety Ben Minich, who was a later offer but is a late riser in the class of 2023. And on Saturday, four-star running back Dylan Edwards is expected to commit to Notre Dame based on all current predictions and crystal balls. So we'll talk a little bit about both of them. But also, I just realized I don't have Greg to go off on a rant here to give me time to sip my beer. So I'm gonna take a little sip here, after talking to Osbury before we get into these next two recruits. Yeah, that is tasty, guys. This is a good beer. I highly recommend Equilibrium Brewery, by the way, to any of you listening who may be in or around the New York area who also are, big into IPAs and beers. Back to the subject at hand, though. Yes, Ben Minich, safety prospect, a little bit lower rated than some of the other prospects in this class. On three has him as the number 528 overall prospect, and has him at a three-star. 24/7, however, in their own rankings, has him as a four-star. So they've moved him up. And some of the current offers, that he has, that he's picked up, kind of reflect that level of ranking. So he's got some offers, you know, from schools like Oklahoma, Stanford, in addition to the Notre Dame offer that he picked up just within the in the last month. But very solid safety prospect, like I said, late riser from Cincinnati area. Really came in onto Notre Dame's radar when it seemed pretty clear that Caleb Downs was trending away from them, and the staff wanted to add another linebacker, to the mix. That's where Minich really came in. Now, obviously, again, he hasn't committed to Notre Dame yet. However, if we look at the current crystal ball on three, it is currently at 91.8% in Notre Dame's favor. So pretty strong indicator so far, since following the on-three on-three rankings and predictions here. I don't recall anybody who was ever at 90%, a day out from their committing anywhere else. So let's assume, Notre Dame picks him up. Very good addition into the Notre Dame secondary. Notre Dame wanted to add another safety to go along with Peyton Bowen, who we're going to talk about in a little bit. And Adon Schuler from the great state of New Jersey, and Minich really gives them a nice rounding out of the secondary for a total of five defensive backs this year. Moving on to Saturday's potential addition, and that is 4-star running back Dylan Edwards. So this was a very fast-moving recruitment for Notre Dame, where Notre Dame offered, while Edwards was committed to Kansas State, he visited, last week, shortly after getting the offer, within a day or two, decommitted from Kansas State, and then within another few days, announced that he would be making a commitment on Saturday. Again, you add all that up, and it looks like it's very likely that he will be the next addition into Notre Dame's class. Now, the on-three predictor is not as high for Notre Dame on Edwards as it is for Minich, but it is coming in at 66.5%. And there were a number of crystal balls that came in on 24/7, four different predictions on-three. Came in for Edwards to Notre Dame, within the last few days as well. So all strong indicators, that it looks like Notre Dame could be picking up a very versatile, kind of 4-star or not kind of, but consensus 4-star, running back here. On three has him at number 292 overall, number 17 running back. In the class, really known for his known for his speed. And I know I saw some chatter on Twitter what does this mean for the other recruits in the class? I would say it doesn't really mean anything for, say, a Jeremiah Love, who all indicators are that Notre Dame is still trending very, very well for. So I wouldn't take it into that. If anything, Notre Dame going after, a speedier back, knowing that they are pitching Love on more of like a Debo Samuel hybrid, running back receiver kind of role, could mean more, for where the Notre Dame staff feels they are with somebody like Ronan Hanifin, who by now, when we started July, everybody thought Hanifin would be, committed to Notre Dame. It hasn't happened. All reports are, it seems like he's really torn between Clemson and Notre Dame. So we'll see where that one, nets out. But I wouldn't really read anything into the acceleration of the recruitment of Dylan Edwards, into where Notre Dame stands with Jeremiah Love at this point. Still seems like that's going to be another addition to this class at some point for Notre Dame, hopefully this summer. And I gotta say, if they are able to pull in Edwards and Love and add that to to the class at hand, along with Jaden Lamar. That is an exciting and versatile versatile backfield in this class. Again, not all three will play, you know, running back exclusively. We know that Love has been told he's being recruited in that Deebo Samuel type of role. But that is one heck of a collection of talent. So if Notre Dame pulls that off, hats off to new running back coach Dylan McCullough, and also wide receivers coach Chancey Stuckey, because if you obviously you're pitching somebody on a hybrid role, both coaches are going to play a factor there. But those three, again, well, one's already committed in Osbury. Notre Dame could be adding Minich on Friday night and could be adding Edwards on Saturday night. So I don't know what it is about these rushes at the beginning of months with commitments, but it does look like by Saturday evening, Notre Dame could be at 23 total commitments for the class of 2023 and could be, I don't want to say done, because obviously there's a few more prospects Notre Dame is going to be going after, but close to it, close to hitting numbers by first weekend in August. Not too bad, but that would still leave a lot of time for the class, or sorry, for the staff to focus in on a couple of the remaining prospects. Some of whom may or may not still be, long shots. Somebody like a Samuel Mpemba, who the staff is still going to recruit up until to the very end, even if it doesn't look like he's trending Notre Dame's way at this point. But that will give them a lot of time to focus there. Taking a quick breather and a quick sip of my beer here. That leaves one position in this class that is still very much up in the air, and it's very much it's one of the most important, if not the most important, and that's quarterback. We did learn within the last week, since we last podcasted and talked to you all, that Notre Dame's latest attempt at a adding a quarterback to the class of 2023 did come up a little bit short. So Austin Novosad was offered a scholarship in July. He did visit Notre Dame. He visited a couple other schools. He was looking at Texas A&M, looking at Ohio State. Ended up ultimately sticking with his Baylor commitment. Not necessarily a huge surprise. If anything, whatever quarterback Notre Dame lands at this point will be a surprise, based on the strategy that was employed for this cycle of going all in on Dante Moore and then coming up short. But again, it wasn't a surprise, I should say, that Novosad didn't end up at Notre Dame, just because Notre Dame got in so late. If anything, it was probably more of a surprise that Notre Dame made. Made it somewhat, somewhat interesting. But with Novosad off the board, Notre Dame did move on to Kenny Minchie, a Pitt commitment, which I think, I don't know if I said it on the pod or if I just maybe said it to Greg, but I've made my feelings towards Pat Narduzzi known on the podcast at times. I think he's one of the whiniest head coaches in all of college football. I think he's really annoying. I think he thinks he is, better than he is. I think he thinks his program is better than he is. His whole little rant about Michigan State a couple weeks ago and the bowl game that Pitt played them in was kind of the epitome of Pat Narduzzi and just how annoying he really is. So I would love it if Notre Dame were to steal a quarterback commit from Pat Narduzzi this late in the cycle. For nothing else, going back to how we started the recruiting portion of this pod, it's just for the pettiness. Like, I would love it for Narduzzi to just get like all pissed off about it and, make some stupid comments to the media about decommitments and mention Notre Dame, because he will, because that's just what he does. And, he's just annoying. He's annoying. Is the only way to put it. It's somebody that I don't care how many games he wins. I'm glad he's not Notre Dame's coach, and I'm glad Notre Dame never ended up looking at him for any of the. I guess the only time Notre Dame maybe could have looked at him actually would have been to replace Kelly, because Narduzzi was still defensive coordinator when Notre Dame hired Kelly back in late 2009. But man, what a just annoying coach that would just be great to steal a recruit from. Not to mention one who could play some pretty damn good football. And Kenny Minchie is a four-star quarterback. So we'll see what happens here. Again, Notre Dame tried with Nova Sad. Didn't work. We'll see if it works with Minchie, but they got to add a quarterback to this class. You can't go this cycle without adding a quarterback, especially given the state of college football today. You never know what's going to happen, with your roster. Notre Dame's got four quarterbacks this year, all of whom have eligibility in 2020, for 2023. But you never know what's going to happen. There's transfers. There's all of that, especially at the quarterback position. So Notre Dame's got to add a quarterback. See who it is. Hopefully it's Minchie, and we can kind of put that to bed and stop talking about quarterback recruiting for this year, and stop focusing on how if Notre Dame didn't go all in on Dante Moore, they probably would have a quarterback right now. But hey, that is it's in the past. Can't really do too much about that anymore. Ooh. Last thing to touch on recruiting, and I honestly didn't think I'd talk about recruiting for as long as I am here, but it is poaching season, folks. And other programs are coming in hot after Notre Dame's commitments. I would be remiss if I did not mention, Peyton Bowen and Keon Keeley in this week's pod, because we haven't talked about it and talked about how other programs have both, in their sights. And this is what happens when you go after the top talent in the country. Other programs want to go after the top talent in the country, and they don't back off when somebody is committed to you. If anything, it just puts a target on you in a lot of cases. So we know Peyton Bowen took some visits last weekend. We know Keon Keeley took some visits last weekend. Not ideal, right? It's not ideal when two of your headlining defensive commits are visiting other schools late July, early August. But if there's a positive that we can take out of it at this point, is we're almost a week out from those visits, and both have remained committed to Notre Dame. Now, neither has kind of reaffirmed that commitment and said, hey, I'm shutting down my recruiting at this point. But neither one has also posted something that said, hey, I'm opening up my recruiting. And I think that's kind of the death blow generally for Notre Dame in these situations, is when they open it up and they say, I'd like to thank Notre Dame. I'm opening up my commitment, and I'm open to all schools. There have been instances where when that's happened, they have ultimately come back to Notre Dame, but they are few and far between, right? So I'm thinking of somebody like a Deon Colsey that happened with. It happened with Braden Lindsey. Going back a little bit farther, it happened with Stephon Tuitt. So it does happen. It does happen. However, it's also usually the exception, not the norm when they decommit. So my point in all that is, it's very positive right now that neither one has come out and publicly decommitted from Notre Dame. I don't know why I said it weird right there. Probably the IPA kicking in. However, that's a good thing. That's a very, very good thing. But Notre Dame is in for a fight for both of them. These other programs are not going to back off, until they're told stop. And it doesn't seem like either is really ready to totally shut things down. So Notre Dame's in for a fight. I think the good thing here is that we know this staff is prepared for it. They're recruiting these kids like they're uncommitted. They are working as hard as they were to get those commitments in the first place. Whether or not both ultimately sign with Notre Dame, I have no idea. I don't think anybody really does. You know, at this point, I know On3 was doing some, you know, nonsensical things about, you know, predicting poaches and things like that. And it's like, whatever, guys, you know, get your clicks, go for it. I don't care. I don't think anybody, you know, really knows. I know some of the Bama recruits have been, you know, tweeting, I'll flip, you know, guaranteed I'm going to flip Keon Kelly. But to be honest, that reeks of a little bit of desperation to me. I'm not overly concerned about that. I think that it's really going to boil down to Notre Dame putting a good product on the field this fall for players of Bowen and Keeley's ilk. You're going to need to put a good program on the field or a good product on the field. You can't go into the horseshoe and lay an egg. You can't host Clemson and lay an egg. You can't drop a game that you shouldn't drop during, you know, during the regular season. You got to look like a legit top 10 program. And it's going to be hard because, you know, Ohio State and Clemson are pretty damn good programs. And there's some other tough games, you know, mixed into the schedule as well. But as long as Notre Dame wins football games this fall and looks good, I think they will have a very good chance to, you know, to keep both in their class. But it is, like I said, it is not going to stop anybody from coming after either of them. So with that, again, I'm going to take a little sip of my beer here, and then we're going to talk fall camp, and then we're going to close with some questions. And we're already half an hour in, folks. Like I said in the beginning, I didn't know if it was going to be, you know, 45 minutes, an hour, hour and a half. Looks like we are trending here. So we're trending towards being an hour. So, you know, so there we go. So let's take a look here. Like I said, let's start talking about fall camp. Before we talk about, you know, fall camp, what I'd like to take a minute and mention here is our sponsor. And that's Ticket IQ. We mentioned them on the pod last week. We mentioned them again because you know why? Notre Dame 2022 football tickets are on sale now. The Fighting Irish have the second most expensive tickets in all of NCAA football, meaning high checkout fees using sites like StubHub. If you want to skip the fees, Ticket IQ is the way to go. Head over to TicketIQ.com now and save 10 to 20% on all games. Most importantly, expensive games like Clemson on November 5th. Save money and try out TicketIQ today. Give them a chance, folks. Take a look. If you're trying to get tickets to that Shamrock Series game, if you're trying to get tickets to the Clemson game, you don't want to buy tickets to, if you don't want to buy tickets to other games just to get into Clemson, give them a look and see what they have, and no checkout fee or no ticket fees like StubHub and those other sites. All right, let's talk some fall camp, guys, because you know why? College football's right around the corner. Recruiting is great; it gets us through the off season. It was great for July, which is really that lull. Like June and July are the lulliest of lulls of the off season. And then we come to August and we see the practice helmets and we see the practice reports and we start overreacting to the tiniest little bit of news that we see. We get really excited about players that have gained weight, lost weight, you know, depending on the position, players that make crazy catches in those 35 second clips that we see from the official Notre Dame feeds and whatnot. But there's a lot to be excited about fall camp for this year. It's a very, you know, I think we say it every year, but it is a very unique season. New coach, almost a full new staff, new quarterback, a lot of questions in certain areas, but also a lot of answers, kind of coming in for as many moving parts as there are this offseason. There's really not a ton of, you know, open positions, so to speak. And Greg and I talked about that a few weeks back on the, you know, on the pod about how there's not a whole lot of, you know, quote unquote camp battles, you know, for starting positions, you know, heading, heading into the season. So since we talked about that, I figured something I'd talk about. Just one, you know, some players I'm excited to, you know, to watch this, you know, this summer to see how they progress. Maybe some tried to focus on some players that we haven't really talked about, you know, already. Some things I'm really excited about, again, to watch over the, you know, over the course of the next few weeks before the season gets here. And we'll see. Maybe talk some captains. But again, we're going to see how timing is going before, you know, before I dip into the questions. But let's talk about players I'm excited about. You know, we'll start with some players that I'm excited about. And first one on my list here should be of no surprise to anybody. If you've listened to the pod, you know, since last year, if you've listened to it at all in the off season, Maris Liefau, obviously. He was my breakout player last year by all accounts. In fall camp, it seemed like he was going to be that breakout player before he got hurt and was lost for the season. So I'm just excited to see what he, you know, what he looks like. If we hear the same things about him being the beast that he was last year, and just kind of seeing him finally unleashed, you know, in this defense. We got some glimpses of it in that North Carolina game, you know, 2 years ago, where it was like, ooh, that's the player we all thought, you know, he could develop into. So it's gonna be fun to see if he can do that on a consistent basis, and if he just kind of picks up right where he left off. So he's one I'm pretty excited about. Linebackers in general, and we're gonna talk more about linebackers, but I'm just, and I've mentioned it on other pods, I just love that group. I think it's one of the most exciting position groups on the entire roster, you know, this year. So, and you know what, while we're here, another name on my list here of players that I'm really excited for, that is that linebacker. He's a little bit farther down my list, but since we're at linebacker, I'll mention him here, and that's Prince Colley. Yeah, because again, came in with, you know, winning the High School Buckus Award, and then really just had a bunch of setbacks last year. You know, as his, you know, during his freshman season, I think just kind of derailed that a little bit. He got some snaps, you know, towards the end of the year. So I'm excited to see what he looks like full off season, you know, full off season program, full spring practice, you know, full fall camp, just what he can, you know, what he might bring, you know, to the table. Sticking on defense, another name I've mentioned quite a bit, and again, time for a sip. That was a larger one. I realized I got to start maximizing these sips here when I don't have somebody to talk for a couple minutes at a, you know, at a time where I could just naturally, you know, sip this and enjoy it as much. However, what I'll say is, you know, Riley Mills is a guy I'm very excited to watch play football this year. We saw the glimpses of what he looks like as a defensive end in that UVA game. And now knowing that he is going to be playing there full time, very excited to see what he does in fall camp here. I think I jokingly said he was going to get 10 sacks in one of the previous pods. Probably a bit, just a bit ambitious, but I do think he is in line for a, you know, for a very big season. And he just kind of has that prototypical strong side defensive end build, that, you know, I think can lead him to being a game breaker in this, in this defense, especially playing opposite somebody like Isaiah Foskey, who is going to get so much attention, you know, from opposing defenses, that if they don't pay attention to Riley Mills, he's going to be a game wrecker on a consistent basis. So he's one I'm very excited to watch in fall camp. Xavier Watts is another, because he just feels a little bit, I don't know, man. He feels a little bit like an enigma of sorts. You know, this you know, this camp where it's like he played a lot in the second half of last year, but now there's a lot of safeties in the mix, and it's like, where does he fit in? He's obviously super athletic. He's showed really good instincts when he got in the game last year, specifically against you know, in that Navy game, where he took really good angles, you know, towards ball carriers, which is a pretty damn good trait to have for a safety. But I'm going to be interested to watch where he falls in the mix. You know, what is his role in the defense going to be? It's really good to have instinctual, athletic players in your secondary, so they got to find some place, you know, for him. And I think he's going to be, like I said, I think he's going to be fun to watch where he ultimately lands. After we talked, you know, last week, now I'm very excited to see more of, you know, more of Jaden Mickey and see if he forces his way, you know, onto the field more as a freshman than maybe thought that he would initially. But maybe excited to watch him. All the young corners as well. There's a lot of young defensive backs on this, you know, on this team, and things are going to shake out in the secondary in fall camp. So going to be excited to to watch all of them. It's interesting, as I'm looking at my list of players, that a lot of them are on the defensive side of the ball. And that's because I think on the offensive side of the ball, there's so many known. There's a lot of knowns, right? You look at the offensive line; it's largely known. Michael Mayer is a known. Even at running back, I think you got, you know, you kind of know what you have with Chris Tyree. I mean, it'll be interesting to, you know, watch again how he handles being, you know, the top back. But I think there's more. It's very extreme almost. I feel like there's a lot of knowns, but a lot of unknowns too on offense, where there's not a lot of middle ground. So you got somebody like Tyler Buchner, very young. So obviously excited to see, what Buchner is going to look like, since we didn't get to see him in the spring game. But there are those extremes on the offensive side of the ball. So I'm interested to see what Logan Diggs looks like. I think it's generally, like, the general consensus is he's going to miss a few games to start the season. But, you know, we see him posting these crazy videos of him, looking pretty good, you know, in his rehab and training. So it's going to be interesting to hear what Marcus Freeman says about Logan Diggs tomorrow, specifically when he gives his injury updates to kick off fall camp. Going to be very interested to see what Tobias Merriweather is able to do. It seems like there's a buzz slowly starting to develop around Tobias Merriweather. And we know the depth concerns at wide receiver. So there is a plenty of opportunity for him to make some noise if he is, if he's ready for it, this fall. And those were the names that I jotted down. Now, when I was doing my prep for this about 10 minutes before I started to hit the record button, but Those are generally some of the players I'm really going to be watching. I think Jadarian Price would have been on that list if he were not if he were not hurt. Mitchell Evans would have been on that list again if he were not had not gotten hurt. So maybe somebody like a Kane Barong, who again is coming off of injury. Eli Raridan as a freshman who is coming off injury, but an ACL injury in high school, but has been cleared. So he's somebody I'm going to be interested to see if he's ready, because I think a lot of people thought he might have been might have seen some early playing time before that injury. So now we'll see if he is fully ready for that. And then wide receiver position in general, and what who's available to what level. Since Joe Wilkins is coming off the injury, Avery Davis coming off of off of his injury as well. So all things that will be interesting to hear, updates from Marcus Freeman on Friday, and also just to watch develop over the course of over the course of the next few weeks. All right. About 44 minutes in. We got a bunch of questions. So I think I'm gonna go through some of the things that I'm really excited about. We could table the talk of captains for this year, because I think, maybe we'll fit it all in, right? It's still early enough. Normally I'm just starting recording with Greg. So the one benefit, folks, of recording solo, other than having no concept if the things that I'm saying are making a whole lot of sense, feel free to let me know if some of this is incoherent rambling, preferably on Twitter and not in our Apple reviews that are still looking a little pristine. But one of the benefits, of this is I got to start early. So normally we start at about like 10:30, 10:40 Eastern. I'm almost done at this point. You know, we're at least we're on the back nine, if nothing else, and it's at around that time. So that's a positive. Like I said, other than that, this could be, the most incoherent, rambling, Billy Madison style podcast you've ever listened to. But hey, it's what makes it fun, makes it interesting. So we're going to go through some things I'm excited about. And it's just a couple things that I had jotted down that I am really excited to see. One of which is the depth and just competition at both linebacker and defensive line. So I teased this up already, but I just keep going back to this, that there's going to be linebackers that are on the second string who 100% would have started on some other Notre Dame teams over the last, 10, 15 years. Because Notre Dame's got some pretty damn good depth and a lot of talent at the linebacker, at the linebacker position. Take somebody like Prince Kali. He'd be start. I have no doubt that on some of those, maybe late Weiss teams, even some of the early Brian Kelly teams, Prince Kali, even after barely playing as a freshman, given all the challenges he had, we'd be sitting here saying like, oh man, penciling him in as a starter, given his kind of pedigree. And, and attributes coming out of high school. Whereas now we're sitting here thinking like, well, man, there'll probably be a role for him. Like, where's he going to fit in? Because there's so many other talented linebackers on the roster. Take a Jalen Snead, 5-star linebacker on some services. Again, any other year almost. And we're thinking, is he start day one? That's not the case though right now. Now we're thinking like, well, will they find a role for him? And that is exciting. And that is the kind of talent that Notre Dame really needs to get back to at every position before, to truly challenge for a national championship. And that's what makes it so exciting, is to see it starting to happen at some critical positions, because it's not just linebacker where that's happening. It's happening on the defensive line, where again, guys who are buried down the depth chart are the kind of guys that maybe in some previous years Notre Dame really would have been banking on to be top line starters for them. But both of those positions are pretty stacked relative to what we're used to. Is it Georgia's defensive status from last year? Maybe not, but it's a step in the in the right direction for Notre Dame. There's a lot of players in that front seven that, again, it's like, what are the roles going to be? I should have mentioned Jordan Botello. We mentioned him a lot on this pod. We love Jordan Botello on this pod. I just want to see him just cause havoc on opposing offenses, because I feel like he was born to do that. I feel like he was born to just make opposing offensive players' lives miserable. And that's what I want to see him do. What role they find for Botello this year, I'm not sure how they will deploy him, but he seems like too good of a football player not to have a role and not to be on the field. But just another example of a player that previous years, he would be again being counted on to be some top line starter. Remember, how many years ago was this? This is where Greg would be able to correct me, but I'm thinking of when we had so little linebacker talent and so little linebacker depth. The poor Harrison Smith at 205 or 210 pounds or however many pounds he was when Charlie Weiss and Corin Brown forced him to play linebacker, just because he was talented and athletic, and they were trotting him out, and the guy got handled a little bit as a linebacker. He's not a linebacker. And guess what? Turned out to be one of the best safeties in the NFL in the last decade. Once he was playing at his proper position. But I still remember those days. So coming into a season where we just look at the depth at linebacker and defensive line and say, man, there's a lot of players here who could start on previous Notre Dame teams who are not going to, and who, again, you gotta search and squint and look for a role for. That's exciting. I mean, I think you have the same on the offensive line, where we touched on this on the pod last week. Man, the offensive line really has a chance to be pretty damn good. You got two future first round draft picks as your bookends. You got Jarrett Patterson, who came back, who could have gone to the NFL last year, but who came back to improve his draft stock. It appears as though we're going to have Zeke Correll, who played so well, at center in the spring, that he got Patterson to move to guard. So add all that up, and then you got a bunch of super talented linemen fighting for one starting position right now, it appears. And that is, it's just exciting. And it's fun to think about what the possibilities could be with a dominant offensive line, because Notre Dame's going to need it. You got a young, inexperienced quarterback. You got questions at receiver in terms of depth, which are compounded because of some of the players coming off of injury. And you got some questions at running back solely because, again, of injuries. So if Notre Dame has a dominant offensive line, that really changes the calculus on what this offense might be able to do. Because that's the big question. The question is going to be, the whole season is going to come down to, how good can the Notre Dame offense be? Because I really think that this Notre Dame defense can be one of the best defenses we've seen in a long time at Notre Dame. Jamie from ISD pointed it out at one point in the offseason, just the similarities to 2012. And it's something I've been thinking about a lot lately, because it does feel a lot like that, where this could be a really, really, really good defensive team. Now, the difference between 2012 and this year, however, is I don't know. There wasn't an Ohio State on the 2012 schedule. I don't even think there was a Clemson. That game in Oklahoma, was tough. But I don't think it is at the level of what Clemson could be by the time they get to South Bend. So we'll see, though. But I do think that this defense can be pretty damn good. And when you have a pretty dominant defense and potentially a dominant offensive line, it could take a lot of pressure off of an offense that has some questions. But we're going to see. We're going to see starting tomorrow or today, like I said, when you all are listening to this, if that is the case. So last topic I was going to touch on, and I'm going to try to be super brief because we do have questions that I want to answer, is captains. We're going to find out, hopefully soon, who the captains are. We know Avery Davis and Jarrett Patterson are incumbents. I can't imagine them not being captains. Again, they both came back. Speaking of coming back, Isaiah Foskey came back when he could have went to the NFL. Michael Mayer couldn't, you know, just because of the rules. But I think he probably, you know, without the, you know, without the rule, the rules of having to be out of high school for 3 years, probably could have. But I think those two are natural captain candidates. And I am of the philosophy, I don't like when Notre Dame has like seven captains. So if Notre Dame were to have Avery Davis, Jarrett Patterson, Michael Mayer, and Isaiah Foskey as the only captains this year, I wouldn't be upset. I know that's three offense, one defense. So maybe you throw in, I don't know, like a Brandon Joseph, even though he is a, you know, he is a, you know, he's a transfer. You know, maybe they do something like that. But I don't like when Notre Dame has a lot of captains. To me, that defeats the purpose. I would not be upset if Notre Dame had two captains in a given football season, because I think when you start to have more than, you know, when you start to have more than three or four, then it, you just kind of lose the point, and then it's some of it loses the what's the right word I'm looking for? It loses the effectiveness, so to speak, of you know, of having that many captains. And it's like, well, then everyone's a captain. Then not a fan of that. So we'll see who does end up getting named captain here. Hopefully, pretty soon. And with that, we're just under an hour. I'm gonna hit the questions and then. And then wrap this, and it's going to be over an hour. So if you all have made it this far, I greatly thank you for listening to me just talk for the last hour or so. So we're going to, oh man, you know what? I gotta look it up first. I was about to ask, or I was about to ask a question from our friend Oscar, and I mispronounced the way his Twitter name is pronounced last week. So he messaged me and told me. So it's Askarine Bombin. I hope I pronounced that somewhat remotely close. Oscar, apologies if I butchered that. But at Vamos Irish, he has, as always, a three-parter. And is it better to walk into a season with hope or pessimism? I'm going to just say pessimism. Because I, you know, I try to not get my hopes up too high, most seasons. This season, you know, for Notre Dame, I think it's kind of mixed. I don't think Notre Dame fans have to, I don't know. I think kind of everybody's going in a little bit apprehensive, but I can tell you my NFL team, I have a lot of friends who are super, super, super hopeful about our Philadelphia Eagles. And I am trying to go in with pessimism because I learned by watching Ted Lasso that it is the hope that kills you. So I'm going to go with pessimism. He also asked, will the silent count be appropriately coached with the current coaching staff? God, I hope so. And if anybody doesn't get that reference, he's talking about how Notre Dame did not appropriately coach the silent count heading into Georgia, which is one of the loudest stadiums in the country in 2019. And it resulted in multiple, you know, procedure and false start penalties. So we can only hope. I'll say this. It can't be worse. It can't be worse than that Georgia game. So this next question, man, this was good. One of these has to go, Oscar says. Steak, fried chicken, pizza, and tacos. And then in parentheses says, consider these foods in their peak form. Whew. Man, it's tough. And I'll tell you why I think it's tough. Because I think, you know, something like steak, I think obviously people might think, oh, why would steak go? Steak is amazing. I love steak. It is amazing, right? It is great. However, I don't have it nearly as often as I have, you know, probably the others. Like pizza and tacos are definite, like, no-goes. Like, those, there's no way those can go. I got pizza and tacos way too often. And again, if I could have them in their peak form, no way in hell am I getting rid of those. So I think it comes down to steak and fried chicken for me. So I'm going to have to say fried chicken would go here solely because, again, I don't have either probably fried chicken or steak that often, even though I love both. But if I had to choose between two things, I would have to go with the steak in that case because I do love steak. And I probably put, so again, I also don't know, Oscar, does this mean steak in all kinds? Because like if it's like, you know, cheesesteak or just like a full on, like, you know, I don't know, New York strip. So I'm going to, again, I'm going to interpret this as steak in all formats. And that way I'm going to get rid of fried chicken. I'm sorry, fried chicken. Next up, we have Incuro Irish asks, and this is a great question too. You're at a party and there's only PBR, Bud Ice, or Natty Light. Which do you choose? PBR, hands down, all the time. I've drank, I've become somewhat of a beer snob now. I realize that based on the beers that I drink. However, I drank a ton of PBR in my younger, more formative years. And if I had to choose, you know, from those cheap beers, PBR, no questions. He also asks, if you're alone in the Notre Dame locker room, where do you go? Or is there a certain thing you gravitate to? I don't know, man. If I'm alone in the locker room and no one's there, I'm probably looking to see if there's a stool so I could pull it over and I could stand up on it and I could start doing, you know, the new Rockne speech a la Rudy. So I think that's probably where I would go with that one. And he also says, I'm about to be a girl daddy in October. Any advice you would have found helpful? Well, one, great that you're expecting in October. That's when my son was born last year. Any advice you would have found? No, I mean, I think everything that everyone's telling you, man, it's all true. None of it's an exaggeration. You just know that, I guess, I think, actually, the one thing I think that nobody told me that I would have appreciated, but I think is like the first 2 weeks. And then, I don't know, hopefully most of the dads and moms. See, I can't speak for the moms, so I'm going to say most of the dads listening, because I have no, like, obviously the moms go through way, 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 way more. Or way, get it way worse than us. So hopefully the other dads listening would agree. It's like those first 2 weeks are just like, I mean, they're just like a blur and it's just like rough. But after that, it starts to get not so bad. But like those first 2 weeks are just, yeah, you just go with it is basically all I can tell you. Just know that like for the first 2 weeks, not much is going to feel great. You're just going to be, you know, sleeping when you can. But it's all worth it. All worth it. Next up, we got Robbie Knee Neighbor. Says he's got a 5-part question. So I blame Oscar for the multiple part questions because he really started this and it's kind of taken off. So Robbie asks favorite oh man, that's so fitting based on the question. Favorite IPA as of now. Favorite? Oh man. Favorite. I would say there's an IPA from my favorite brewery in Kane called SBX that I love. Anything though, any IPA from Treehouse Brewery in Massachusetts would probably be, you know, on the list as well. Next up, he says favorite Gatorade flavor. Should the sidelines adopt? Also good question, because it probably depends on the situation. I probably like a different Gatorade flavor, say if I've gone for a long run versus if I'm like a little hungover. But lately I have discovered something called Gatorade Fit. I don't know how long this has been on the market. The 7-Eleven in my neighborhood sells it. They have a mango, I think it's tropical mango, something or other. That's really good. And I would say right now it's my favorite because it's only 25 calories. And there's no artificial sweeteners in it. So I don't feel bad drinking it after like a 4 or 5 mile run. Whereas if I were to drink a full on Gatorade after a full 4 to 5 mile run, I'd be like, I just drank like half the calories that I burned. So that would be my answer for that. Should the sidelines adopt? No, probably not. The sidelines should not adopt the low calorie version because those kids are burning more calories than I'm burning on my little, you know, shitty runs. So Next up, what do I need to join you on a solo? I don't, you know what? I don't know. Maybe next time I'll just reach out and we will try to schedule that, Robbie. We'll see. If you're still listening at this point and you heard that, comment and maybe that's it. And maybe that's the qualifier. So, next up, he says, is it possible this weekend is 4th of July style? And I'm obviously referring to the slew of commitments Notre Dame had over 4th of July. It certainly feels that way, Robbie. And it started off on a good note today. Last question was, would you rather have Ohio State scheduled week one or week 10? And I honestly thought about this a lot because I think I prefer week one because I feel like by week 10, some of Ohio State's, maybe advantages in terms of depth at certain positions might be even more pronounced because we know Notre Dame is going to be a little bit of a precarious situation if you sustain, injuries specifically at wide receiver. So I think I'm down with week one, especially because also, you got Tyler Buchner who is a little bit of a wild card. I think other teams are going to think of him solely as a runner. So how Notre Dame deploys him will be interesting. And you have the element of somewhat of an element of surprise in week one versus there's no way in hell you'd have that in week two. So I'm going week one. All right. We got Chris Jenkins coming up next here with questions. As always, thank you for the questions, Chris. He says, can't we get a rant off between Greg and Tex just for fun? And I love that idea. We will try to set that up at some point, whether it's during the season or maybe after the season. I don't know. Or maybe it's still during the summer. We'll see. But I love that idea. Next question is, you had to sit in a room for 24 hours to win $1 million, but had to watch the one Notre Dame loss that pisses you off the most. Which would it be and could you do it? For $1 million, absolutely. I could watch, any of my teams lose any game for 24 hours straight for $1 million. And which one would it be? I thought about this. I'm going to go 2011 Michigan because that's the one game that there's really no reason Notre Dame should have lost that game. It really pisses me off that they lost that. That was probably the most pissed off I remember being after a Notre Dame loss. Not the most upset. I've definitely been more like upset and disappointed and down. But that was just pure piss and vinegar after that game. Question three was leave 5-star reviews, people. I agree. Listen to Chris. He is a smart fellow. Next, we got Drew Brennan at Drew Brennan 77 says, if beating Ohio State meant a 9-3 record for the Irish in 2022, would you take it? And it's a tough question to answer because I don't know what the alternative is. Like if we lose, what's the final record? I don't think I would because it's like 9-3 beating Ohio State means you lost to probably Clemson, USC, and BYU. And it's like, okay, cool. We had a good win week one, but did the rest of the season was not great. So I don't think I would. I'd be like, meh. So I'm going to say no to that one. All right. Closing out the second round of questions that we got here. Chris Jenkins came in with another one. Stranger Things. Yes or no, if you've ever watched it. And if yes, what are your thoughts on the season? And if no, you're missing out. I am sorry to say, Chris, I'm missing out. However, I can tell you all, I'm almost done with season two of All American, which has my wife and I totally hooked. Absolutely love it. And we watch multiple episodes usually every night. Love it. All right, we got this is Stevie's at Stevie. Stevie's 55 says, think Lindsey will consistently be the dynamic playmaker he was at times in 2019, or has that ship sailed? And then says, and to be clear, I am a big fan of Lindsey. This isn't a dig on him. I just think he was used more as a possession receiver last year and was hurt the year before that. This is a great point. I don't know. if we're going to see Lindsey used the way he was in 2019 again. Because I don't know why we wouldn't have, you know, last year, unless he was still, you know, unless there was still something lingering that we did not know about. So I'm going to say, I mean, he came back. He's a fifth year senior. As I'm thinking through this, doesn't have a lot of classwork that he has to do as a fifth year senior, so he can really focus on football. So I think we are going to see him as a much more dynamic playmaker than we did the last two seasons. If we see him to the level of 2019, I think it's going to be a damn good year for the Notre Dame offense. All right, next question we got from Woj at Woj to God says, offensive sleeper, defensive sleeper, freshman sleeper. And this is a great question. And it's a great question because I feel like, I mean, it depends on what your definition of a sleeper is, first of all. Because in this day and age, literally everybody is written about and talked about. So it's like, it's really hard, I think, to like be a full on, you know, sleeper. Like for instance, I don't think Jaden Mickey is a sleeper anymore because he's had a lot of buzz this offseason. Whereas he was probably, you know, I don't know, 6 months ago. Tobias Merriweather, not a sleeper because everybody's hoping that he can, you know, he can, you know, he can play some downs. So, Jabrain Payne, I think, could be a sleeper on offense and a freshman sleeper, mainly because of the depth at running back. He's going to get some snaps, early on in the season, because of that. I'm going to go Nana and Osafa Mensah as my sleeper on defense. Because again, some people are talking about him, but I don't think too many are. He showed some flashes last year, and I really think he can make some plays, in this defense. Oh, and then again, let's see, if I had to go with another offensive sleeper, since I cheated and said an offensive freshman sleeper, I'm gonna go Kane Barong, and mainly because Mitchell Evans got hurt. And now I think there's an opportunity for Barong to step in. We got next question from Irish Ben 10. Will we see any Jamie Foxx, LL Cool J, any given Sunday RPO design delayed pitches where TB gets hit and the ball gets flicked to Tyree, you know, streaking down the sideline? Maybe. Man, it's been some time since I've seen any given Sunday, so I had to go back and watch that. I mean, I think the question really is like, is Tommy Rees going to be able to do some more creative things than he had in the past? And that answer, I do think, is yes. And Irish Ben 10 also says, will we see Endy do a double reverse trick play with Avery Davis passing the ball to Tyler Buchner for a touchdown? So this is similar to, I think, what is being described here as the affectionately call the Philly special, which was when Nick Foles caught a touchdown in the Super Bowl to help give the Eagles their first Super Bowl title after Tom Brady dropped a pass a few the quarter or actually no it was the same quarter, so you know, a few series earlier. But I would, again, I don't see why that play shouldn't be, or some variation of that. Avery Davis is a former quarterback. Why not take advantage of his, of his arm? So I hope so, Irish Ben. We'll see if Tommy Rees reads the comments and we see him. Here we go. We have. Again, Irish Ben, thank you for all the questions, but it says, who is your wild card kicker that takes the job from the two guys whose names I've already forgotten? Options: Leprechaun mascot, Xavier Watts, Jalen Sneed. Okay. Of those three, that if I have to pick, I'm gonna go Watts because I know he's super athletic and I want to see him on the field. So I'll go with Watts. Last question from Brian Jung says, if you could take one non-QB player from the past 20 years to fill in a hole to get this team over the hump, who would it be? Bonus points for someone not a wide receiver. And then he says, cheers. One, Brian, I hope you enjoyed your trip to Treehouse this week. I mentioned that brewery on this pod. I know Brian was there. Brian was there this week, but they have freaking ridiculously good beers. All right. So if I were to pick one player from the last past 20 years to put this team over the hump, who would it be? I'm going 20 years. Yeah. I'm going Michael Floyd. You know, even though you said bonus points, I'm going to get to that though. Bonus points were not a wide receiver. I mean, it's the biggest position in need, I think, on this team. And if you added Floyd, a receiver like Floyd, to this roster to pair with Styles and Lindsey, that's a pretty good receiving core. So I'm going to say Floyd. However, you said bonus points for someone not a wide receiver. And this is where I'm going to give not a shout out to my partner in crime who's not here, but I'm gonna make it feel like Greg is here, folks. Again, if you're still listening after an hour, 14 minutes of me talking by myself here, but I'm gonna say Kyle Hamilton. Right there, imagine Kyle Hamilton and Brandon Joseph in the same secondary, along with the linebackers and defensive backs. The linebackers and defensive linemen this team has. I'm taking that all day. So I think those are the two, I think, that come to mind. Other than that, maybe I was trying to think of a corner. Because corner is another position that you're like, I could use some help there. So, like, but the problem is, in the last 20 years, the last 20 years, technically, Shane Walton at corner fits the mold because he played on the 2002 team. So Shane Walton is another one. So you asked for one, Brian. I gave you three, but those are three. Two non-receivers would be Shane Walton, Kyle Hamilton. And with that, folks, I've made an hour and 15 minutes. I've talked a lot. I hope it was coherent. I hope you enjoyed it. I appreciate all the questions because that helped fill a lot of the time. Greg's going to be back. If you did not enjoy this, I apologize. But also, Greg will be back and we can get some rants from Greg. Maybe we'll get Ryan back on the pod to have the rant off with Greg as requested. But until then, we got some football coming up. We're going to get some commitments coming up here, hopefully over the next couple of days. And we're going to start talking more about the 2002 Fighting Irish over the next couple of weeks. So keep the questions coming, keep the reviews coming. We didn't really technically have any this week, so let's get some more coming in, more 5-star reviews. We love those. And as always, go Irish.